is just like interruption. It's like unnecessary static in your head and in your mind because it's like their processing is just different. The person who needs to process that is different versus me, who's like, give me more sarcasm. I'm all about it, right? So, just kind of like shifting the way you communicate, I think can help somebody who maybe you're thinking isn't a team player or isn't somebody who takes humor well or anything like that. It's like, well, ask yourself, do they really need to be humorous? Is that part of their job to be humorous and to be like the life of the party? Or do you need them to do a really specific job? And are they really, really good at that job? And so if they are and you want to see them succeed, I think it's a really easy thing to just shift how you communicate with them so that they can be the best at what they do. Another thing that you can do is like for those that, may have issues staying still for long periods of time, or, attention is the issue, or the challenge, right? Giving them a lot of leeway to just have free movement. And this is like, I oftentimes wonder like why these are hard things, because even in the schools, the better of the schools do these things, right? For, kids that just have either attention deficit things, they'll allow them, good teachers that I've seen will allow them a little bit more time outside of recess just to kind of get some energy out. One of the best teachers I ever saw, she would literally let these two kids in my daughter's class just kind of like go to the gym for a time when they started getting fidgety. And it was just like maybe 15 minutes to allow them to either bounce a ball or do something tactile other than the work that they were doing. And then when they came back, she was able to garner their attention back I mean, obviously, she had to do some things to get them back, but they were much more willing to work with her after she gave them that. I think we're all just big kids, quite frankly. I think that it's not unreasonable in the workplace to allow some free movement for someone like that, whether it's having fidget toys around or allowing them to have their own fidget toys around to, kind of play around with, either in a meeting where there has to be a lot of focused energy, or even throughout the day, or allowing them another break or another two breaks, short breaks, right, to just get up and walk around or do whatever they need to do. I think these are like reasonable accommodations that we can make to make somebody feel more comfortable in the day. And I think the thing I want to make sure I get across is that, with all of these things, what am I asking you to do? I'm asking for us to redefine what professionalism looks like, right? We've had this like static idea of what professionalism is supposed to be in the workplace, but this spins it on its head, right? And it's not to say that we're giving free passes to anybody to, be disruptive or to be rude or anything like that, but it's just giving so much more space, I think, for a specific group of people to show up as they are. But then I also think it just gives all of us more latitude to be who we are too. And so I don't see how nobody loses in this. They win, we win in the way that I think about things. So we talked a little bit about language and, shifting the way we speak about things, but language does matter. And I think, right now we are in a period of time where everything is about hyper individualization. And while some people might be off put by it, I think it's a natural outcome of just like coming through many different eras where individuality was not respected, not in society, not at work, right? So now it's like we're all having to be that much more careful with one another, which we should be. We don't want to, I don't think it's about kid gloves. I think the pendulum will eventually swing back to center where there's more balance and we're all a bit more evolved about how we're operating with one another. But I do think that language matters. And I think if people, for especially for marginalized people, if there's a certain way that they want to be spoken to, or spoken about, I think we should honor those things, right? So when it comes to, differently abled people and even neurodiverse people, you have two different camps. You have the person first language, and then you have identity first language. So an example of person first language would be to say, a person with ADHD or a person with dyslexia. So that would be two examples. If we're talking about an example of identity first language, we would be saying something like, oh, she's an autistic person, or she's a, I would say autistic person, or she's a neurodiverse person, like if you wanted to really be general about it. In both of these cases, I wouldn't say you'd actually be wrong if you use one or the other, but I would say the more empathetic way of going about it is if you really feel uncomfortable and you don't want to be caught out there, being told that you're saying the wrong thing, I think you can always just ask. Like, do you prefer for me to refer to you in this way or that way? Person first language or identity first language? And you can give examples. You'll all have these slides so you can kind of get the gist of like how to present that. But when in doubt, just ask. And I think more often than not, people are happy not to over-educate you on how to treat them like a human. I want to be very clear about that because a lot of this is, you sitting with your own humanity and also doing your own research and educating yourself so that, someone doesn't have to continuously be victimized by society and then have to teach you about it. But I think on a really basic level, people understand that a lot of this stuff is new to people. So I think if you just simply ask, like, hey, how would you like me to refer to you? I think people are fine with that. So I wanted to take some time to just kind of like get away from, all of those basics and just like talk to you a little bit about like things that I've done over the years in terms of like just really working with those in the disability community. So the picture there is of one of my favorite people. She was actually an intern for me. Kim was an intern for me for a few months, a few years ago, and I adore her. She has cerebral palsy. I share that because, she ended up coming into an as an intern into my business. She was a marketing major and she wanted more experience doing like social media and like brand representation on the behalf of a small business. So it just worked out perfectly. Here's where the challenges were, and I'll tell you how I worked around it. So because of the cerebral palsy, she's extremely intelligent. She's extremely articulate. No delays in language, not really. But there are motor considerations. So when she does, she can type, but when she types, it's going to be slower. For that, we had to make some adjustments. She also relied a ton on assist a ride to get different places. And so I didn't really need her on site with me because I worked from home for the most part, but I did want to still have interactions with her. So to not have to have her go through the nightmare that is assist a ride, which is a whole nother webinar in and of itself, I worked it where she never had to come to me at all. I worked it out with the Viscardi Center, which is what she came through to me, where we would use one of their boardrooms, like say once a month. And so I would drive from where I am in Suffolk County to her, to the Viscardi Center, and that's where we would meet there. Other than that, we did everything on video. I created a virtual environment for her literally back then on Google Drive. Like this was before we had the Trellos and Asanas and all that kind of fancy stuff. I was new, so I didn't really have the money to invest in those things. So I just created a whole virtual environment for her there. And she had different folders for like her tasks and calendars. And we just worked it that way. And she was phenomenal. To this day, I tell people, like, if I had to entrust, anybody to my business, it would be her. I went on vacation. She like ran my whole calendar, my whole social media, content creation, everything. Phenomenal. What did I gain from that? I gained not only a friend for life, but somebody who was an extremely great worker. And I was happy to give her the work experience. Two, I just made her life a lot easier by just making a few tweaks to the way that I would typically do things. And it just ended up working out for us. So that's just one story. I'll share quickly. When I worked in the national laboratory, that was a much harder fit in terms of placing somebody who had, disability or even was neurodiverse. We were a place that, and it still is, I mean, it's top-notch science. They're under the Department of Energy. And so pretty much everybody that comes through there has to have a bachelor's or better. There are very, very few areas in the laboratory where, you can have somebody that has anything below that. So when I started doing this kind of work, and it was necessary because we were an OFCCP contractor, and so, we had to be doing our good faith efforts and, doing all those things. I literally just kind of combed through like our org chart and just looked for like the small pockets where we might be able to just like apprentice people, even if it was on a short base, a short term kind of basis. And then I went to the sites. I literally went to those apartments, walked around the floor, met with the directorate, met with the hiring managers to understand, like from an ergonomic standpoint, like how do people get work done here? Like from soup to nuts, from the time they walk in, how are they walking in? Because you want to understand, like, if you have somebody that has a wheelchair, like, is there accessibility into that place? Are there other things that may harm them that we have to consider? How does the work actually get done? And then you have to start to think about, the disability, if you know what that is, to really kind of pair them with the right kind of work. So I ended up not getting everybody on board, but I ended up finding at least two hiring managers who had a heart for it because they had people in their families that were, people who had either disabilities or were neurodiverse, and they were with it. And so we just kind of crafted experiences like that to suit some people that I wanted to bring in, both from the Sovarti Center as well as another organization called Family Residences and Essential Enterprises. We just call it FREE. That's why I had to think about that. But I just wanted to give you guys an idea of like some of the ways that you can begin to kind of become an ally and make a difference. And it can be small. It can be an apprenticeship. It can be an internship. It can be, a job tryout. It doesn't have to be like big to begin with, but it makes a difference. So just some ways that I believe you can bridge the gap, shaping vocational training and curriculum from high school through college. This is super important. Going back to that slide about low educational attainment, I feel like industry is not involved enough in this aspect. And there's so many organizations, I'm sure if you look it up in the state where you are, the country where you are, where you'll find that like there are these organizations that are being funded to partner with industry, but nobody's partnering with them. And it's like they have money to even throw at you, not to make that the draw, but like to help them craft these experiences. It's so rewarding. I've loved that work. I'm just going to leave that there. Partnering with nonprofits and other organizations well-versed in serving these communities is basically what I've been talking about. You can literally, if it's the right partnership and they are really doing great work, you can literally create an amazing candidate pipeline from some of these organizations where you're consistently bringing in people and it's like a no-brainer. You figure out the ways and the places where you can fit them in, and you fit them in your organization, and you're suddenly doing the work. Participating in events like ENDEAM, like I said, the National Disability Employment Awareness Month that happens every October. There are tons of online events. Like I said, the Viscardi Center does a really great event. Also going to CUNY Neurodiversity Conference. That one is in March. It's phenomenal.